Okay, everybody, workday's over.
This is the best of the OG with Ovius and Giglio podcast, part of the Capital Broadcasting Podcast Network. Brought to you by Capital Financial Advisory Group. Get your total retirement income plan by texting JOE to 21000. Enjoy the best of today's show. Here's Ovius and Giglio.
Another weekend of football, another weekend of incredible takes. Let's start with college, though. NC State goes up to Boston College. They understood the assignment, come out of there with a win. Great third quarter to put the Eagles away. Meanwhile, North Carolina looked like they were going to put Miami away, but nothing about North Carolina's football season has been easy. A lot of that has to do with North Carolina. They refuse to make things easy on themselves. Penalties, questionable play calling, defensive breakdowns. Miami found themselves driving down the field with a chance to tie or win, and then a miraculous interception at the end of the game seals the deal for the Tar Heels on Saturday afternoon. But I want to go back to NC State because the Wolfpack find themselves in a really interesting position right now. Miami is next. They go down to Coral Gables. They go out in the middle of the Shula Expressway to Joe Robbie Stadium. They don't even go to Coral Gables anymore.
Officially Miami Gardens.
Miami Gardens, yes. Thank you, Giglio. So they go down to Miami, a team that's lost their starting running back. They've lost their starting quarterback. Tyler Van Dyke is their third-string quarterback. That seems like a broken team right now. And Manny Diaz does look like he's on his way out, which is a tricky situation for NC State because this is a team they should go and beat, just kind of like Boston College without their starting quarterback, is a game that they should win, all things considered. They went and did it this weekend. Now the question is you have to do it again to keep your Atlantic Division hopes alive. Breaking through on Clemson was the big deal, but the hardest part of the season for NC State wasn't beating a bad Clemson team. It was having this opportunity in front of you and cashing in. Boston College was the first step, and it was an impressive way to do it.
I wish I knew more about the Price is Right. The yodeling game? The actual name of it?
Yeah.
The mountain climber?
Yeah. And
Cox, do you know the actual name of that game?
Not the actual name. I know exactly what you're talking about, though.
That's NC State's... Yeah. That's NC State's season, right? Yeah. It just so happened that the biggest hurdle was first in Clemson. And, oh, by the way, Clemson looked like crap. They beat Syracuse, who... maybe it's not as bad as we thought?
No, I think that was more I think that's more about Clemson being bad.
Yeah.
There it is.
So you got to keep climbing if you're NC State. And Boston College has been a place where they have had struggles.
But it was at night.
But this game was at night. And what did Dave Doran say after the game? Oh, man, I learned some new curse words. They were really active. They were really into it. You know, Jim Boeheim, sometimes I do know what I'm talking about, bud. Mm-hmm. Maybe sometimes. Not all the time. Just sometimes, mm-hmm. right? So you climb that hurdle now. You get past Boston College after a shaky first half, but I thought they made the plays. Devin Boykin in particular made a great play on Trey Barry in the end zone. That was huge for NC State. The punter from Boston College, Grant Carlson, helping them out by dropping the punt. That was huge for NC State. How about Tanner Engel not getting hurt, Joe? When a little friendly fire, when he collided with De'Eriq Pitts in the third quarter. That was the kind of play where in other years, right, we would have circled that injury, that potential injury, and said, well, that's where the season was sunk. Nope. Tanner Engel missed, I think, two series, came back in, played, looked fine. It was all the breaks, Joe. Like, who is this program getting all of these breaks, Joe?
I don't recognize them. It is a truly blessed season.
Thayer Thomas with like an accidental touchdown.
I know.
I'm not sure the ball was even thrown to him, and then two BC defenders collide. A lot of good things. Dylan Parham scored a touchdown to put him up 24-7, actually. That he looked like he caught the ball. Mm-hmm. Then it looked like you've seen that play review a million times.
It doesn't go their way.
And it doesn't go their way. Before the end of the first half, Mecca Amizi looked like he caught the ball, but I didn't think he had full possession. But you've seen that rule to fumble before.
Yep.
So a lot of breaks NC State's way. That's not to say they didn't make them. Isaiah Moore, another outstanding game from their 20th year linebacker at this point, even though he's another year of eligibility. And Boykin, I mentioned playing at safety.
Boykin was great.
Had two or three different plays where you're like, wow, that really turned the game. And Pitts, De'Eriq Pitts, the corner that they got from Marshall via West Virginia, he's been a real difference maker in their secondary.
Now we get to the interesting portion of the conversation with NC State.
We do.
I thought we sang their praises.
I
talked positively about them in the panic room with Lauren Brownlow, which you can watch on WRALSportsFan.com. When everybody was dogging the Clemson win, saying, well, I mean, it's a terrible Clemson team, I made the argument, I think you agreed, that actually was more difficult to pull off than all the other chances they had against Clemson because there was a real expectation for you to beat that Clemson team. Everybody in the building knew that was your chance. Even Clemson fans were like, yo, if you can't beat this team, I mean, what the hell's your problem, right? All the history built up to a chance, and you did it. It almost didn't happen, but you did it, and it was a breakthrough. So, I mean, I think we've talked relatively fairly about NC State this season, but apparently there are haters in the building. And this is something that Dave Doran has been using to motivate the team, and I don't hate it. Here's Dave Doran after the win against Boston College saying that everybody's essentially against them.
Yeah, I hope so. I mean, look, I can't control the lack of respect that we seem to get publicly. We know about it. Our team recognizes that people don't think we're good. And we're just going to take care of what we can. We're going to focus on us. We're going to take the next week and try to get better again and just keep trying to get better, keep trying to win games. And we're going to end up where we're supposed to be at the end of the year, and people will think what they want to think.
That's Dave. Keep climbing the mountain, man. Keep yodeling.
That's Dave Doran, NC State head football coach, on the matter of respect. Here's the thing. I don't mind what Dave Doran's doing. However, I would point out there's a difference between disrespect and just not caring about NC State.
And Jeff Bezdelic would tell you that those are one in the same, though.
And that saying is?
You show respect by giving no respect.
So there you go. Nobody talks about NC State. There's a reason for that.
Nationally.
Nobody talks about NC State. NC State's role in college football, for the most part, is the team in the ACC that occasionally has a magical night at Carter-Finley Stadium, right?
That's what it has been, yes.
And when NC State fans who have been unimpressed with Dave Doran, when they want Dave Doran out, what do they usually point to? I don't have that game. I don't have that moment where I needed a cigarette after the fact. That's always been the biggest complaint against Dave Doran. And you have to go back 20 years with Philip Rivers to actually have some like legitimate national attention paid to NC State in a positive way, okay? Philip Rivers was the NFL-type QB that had them knocking on the door in the Gator Bowl year and all that stuff, close games against Ohio State, all that stuff. Russell Wilson morphed into the thing people use against NC State. So let's strip all that away and get it to the bare essence of NC State football. They have to fight tooth and nail to get anybody to talk about them nationally in a positive way. So I get what
Dave... Heck, go to Jeopardy. They didn't, couldn't even name
they don't even know.
The school.
So I get what Dave Doran's doing here. And to add more to this layer of why Dave Doran's right to be using this card with his team, it's Mac Brown so much as farts, and it's news on ESPN. Oh, Mac Brown got another recruit.
Where he worked
for 5 years. And even before he worked at ESPN, everybody loves Mac Brown. And you also add the layer at North Carolina where people usually point to North Carolina as the, why aren't they better? They're the sleeping giant. Anytime they get a new coach to come through here, this is going to be the guy who gets people to care about football. And then eventually it fails. Whereas at NC State, they got people who freaking care about football a lot. You can see it with the amount of people that choose to go back to their tailgates in the third quarter. The point is, NC State usually has to fight for this stuff. So I agree with Dave Doran. Nobody's talking about them. Apparently on game day, when people were talking about the wide open ACC, you know whose name didn't come up? NC State. Oh, everybody's got the shiny object in Pitt, right? Dave Clawson of Wake Forest has all the respect, and rightfully so, okay? And Jeff Hafley is the young up-and-coming coach that even you and I are big fans of, who gets a lot of respect as well. Dave Doran's been here for a long time, and Dave Doran's, you know, for the most part, fatten up his record against losing teams, but this is a year in which they can break through. So good on Doran. I absolutely agree with the direction he's going with as it relates to this idea that everybody is against them. Now, Mac Brown also thinks people are against them. Here's North Carolina head coach Mac Brown after the win against Miami, which almost wasn't.
With Jeremiah tipping the ball and that thing stayed in the air for about an hour and a half. I saw it go through Ritz's hands and I think it might have been Vlasic. They were all fighting for it, and it was all tipping. I said, somebody just get that ball. And obviously we did to make a play to win the game. So the most important thing and the thing that I'm so excited about is we found a way to win.
So that was Mac Brown after they found a way to win, and he's excited about the win, even though there was a lot to point to going, damn, man, if this keeps up, this season's going to go really, really bad for people like Sam Howell, who continues to take hit after hit after hit. But that Mac wasn't here for that. Mac wanted nothing but sunshine.
People will be on us about things because certain people just can't help themselves. And one of the things I love about fans is they love to coach. That's why they come. They get into, you should have done this and you should have done that. And really and truly, it's a whole lot easier to coach when you don't have to. I did it for 5 years on TV. Man, I could say anything I wanted, and I didn't know that coach, the kid was sick. I didn't know he was late. I didn't know he was hurt. I didn't know why he substituted, but I could answer it because I didn't have too much information. So I don't mind people being critical because that's part of the reason they come. It's part of the reason they like it. Well, what I've got to do is go fix it. And if you're a North Carolina fan and you can't be really excited and celebrate tonight, you're probably not the fan we want you to be. You should be in coaching instead of being a fan, because this is really cool. And it was a great win, and I'm proud of these kids.
Oh, we've gotten to the fan gatekeeping portion of the program in Chapel Hill. This is 3 weeks in a row now that Mac Brown has had some odd comments to be made about the fans, and I'm not quite sure what the hell's going on here. It's almost like there's this attitude of, well, I mean, you should be grateful that we're even, you know, somewhat in the news or whatever it is, or you should be grateful that I'm even back here or whatever it is. Even though things haven't gone the way that I wanted them to, there's this strange vibe going on right now. I can't put my finger on it.
Mac's having a classic sequence issue right now.
Mm.
This reminds me of Mark Godfrey. This is one of the great moments in Joe and Mark and MFG histories, right? Mark Godfrey on the verge of being fired by Debbie Yao says to me, you know, if my last 2 years were my first 2 years, and my first 4 years were my last 4 years, I'd still be the coach.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
But.
Yes, but that's not how it happened.
No.
And you see here with Mac now, if his first 2 years, if this year was his first year, mm-hmm. well, then, look, man, Larry left me nothing. I got nothing.
I'm building.
Then if you had the next 2 years, well, yeah, then you're on to something. But we don't get to pick our endings. We don't get to pick our order. And Carolina is having a disappointing season. Yes, even a, you know, win over just a completely barren Miami team with a coach with like a cardboard box cutout over there coaching the team. Yeah, you shouldn't have to struggle with that team at home. Sorry.
Speaking of podcasts, Wednesday, Roy. That dadgum legend. First three episodes, those come out on Wednesday. Why are you looking at me like that, Julio? Two episodes are already in the can. We're good.
Okay. We got this.
We're good.
We got this.
All I need for you to do is to put the finishing touches on episode three. We're good. We're fine.
Got this. No.
What's the Ross on Friends? I'm fine. We're fine. Yeah, so... So I don't know who's
it's a gift and a curse, man.
I don't know whose brilliant idea it was to pair two people together to work on large projects who excel at procrastination and scrambling. Because that's you and me. That was me in college. That's me as an employee. I'll get it done in time. I swear. I usually do. Usually turns out pretty good.
I'm fine.
The podcast is fine. Yeah, so the first three episodes of Roy, that dadgum legend, will come out on Wednesday. If you're unfamiliar with this podcast that comes out, Jillio cashed in a favor, and we were able to talk to Roy for a couple hours. And, you know, look, anybody can tell you the story, but nobody's going to tell you the story quite like Roy Williams. And it was a lot of fun to do, and it's been a lot of fun to put together, and it'll come out on Wednesday. The first three of six episodes come out on Wednesday. You can check out the VIP table we got at Abbey Road Tavern and Grill. We'll even give you a $50 tab to get going at Abbey Road. Look for a new video posted to the Fan Facebook page each Wednesday, where we will highlight a couple of the best college football matchups of that upcoming Saturday. All you got to do is comment. We're going to choose one random winner weekly, and then we're sending you off to the VIP table at Abbey Road Tavern and Grill. Joe Brady, the offensive coordinator for the Carolina Panthers, was almost booted from the play-calling VIP table. You know it's bad when Matt Rhule, the head coach of the Carolina Panthers, uses his Monday press conference to say, oh, no, 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 no. See, Joe Brady, the guy who people were identifying as a head coach last year, we're not going to remove play-calling duties from him, but we are going to commit to the run game more. This is after a horrendous offensive showing against the Minnesota Vikings. But because the Vikings are just as bad as the Carolina Panthers, the Vikings kept telling the Panthers, no, 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 we insist that you win this game. Eventually, the Vikings ended up winning it in overtime. Sam Darnold wasn't good, but neither was the rest of the team.
I find myself becoming this Panthers apologist, and yeah. I don't know how I got here.
Uh-oh.
I don't.
Uh-oh.
You know how I feel about Sam Darnold, right?
Yeah, sure.
I believe he's a sunny day player.
Mm-hmm.
And what I mean by that is when it's on schedule and when you're ahead and you can mix in these runs, and he looks really good,
mm-hmm.
right? Christian McCaffrey's back there and the whole line's doing what their line's supposed to be doing. He looks good. Last couple of weeks, without all of those things in place, I think he has struggled.
Mm-hmm.
In the first, what? How many minutes are there in an NFL game? 60?
Mm-hmm.
The first 58, 57, and 55 seconds, he looked like he looked terrible. Forget the Jets version of Sam Darnold. He looked awful.
He had 5 completed passes by halftime, Jaleel.
Okay.
5.
So, but
first play from the game was an interception.
But here's the thing,
mm-hmm.
and this is honestly, if I'm a Panthers fan, I'm leaving the game going, that last drive, it's honestly, it's like my golf game, or most people's golf game,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
Man, I doubled bogeyed this, I hit it in mm-hmm. the water on this par 3, man, I missed that putt, but did you see my birdie on 16,
mm-hmm.
right? Right? That last drive, 11 plays, 96 yards, including 2 fourth down conversions.
Yeah.
Maybe 2 of the best throws he's ever had in his life.
Maybe that's the case.
Right?
Look, Sam Darnold wasn't good. He did have those moments.
No, 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 no. No, no. You're being kind right now. He was flat out awful.
But
that last drive. And what I'm getting at, just to finish my point,
mm.
when you are having a bad day and you can still pull your head out of your ass and give your chance a team to win the football game, which is what he did. That's all you can ask for if you're Matt Rhule. That's
yeah.
all you can ask for. And I thought he acquitted himself nicely in that last drive.
And in Sam Darnold's defense, it wasn't like he was the only bad player on offense. There were drops.
That was like a state game. Like they were dropping every single. I felt like Mike Glennon had PTSD watching that game.
So Darnold gets his 6th completion of the game, 4 minutes left in the third quarter. It's a catch by DJ Moore until he fumbled the ball and gave the Vikings the ball back after they had just gone up 18-17. And that was it was just a disastrous third quarter, which continues to be a thing for the Carolina Panthers. Stat line at the end of regulation was 17 of 41, 200 yards, a touchdown, and a pick. But again, we can point to Sam Darnold because that's the easy part. The more difficult conversation to have is the collective failure that is apparent the last 2 weeks against similar or worse competition, which gets us to this point.
I would also love for you to say right now that Matt Rhule was right.
How was Matt Rhule right?
You, last week, you were critical of him when he pointed out the defense needed to come up with a play.
Are we really doing this with the defense again?
I wouldn't.
What more do you want from the defense when the offense keeps putting you back on the field? I know it's 571 yards.
Overtime.
I understand.
The overtime.
I'd be gassed too.
Now the money's on the table. When the money's on the table, you have to make the play.
When you got nothing left. That's the problem.
No.
That's the problem.
No. They got mushed. They were out of position. I don't know what they were doing on the drive in overtime. That was embarrassing.
Aha.
Embarrassing.
Which gets us to the real point. I just laid out all the things that went wrong. I know you want to bang on the defense for the final sequence.
I just
did.
I literally banged on the table.
I need somebody to answer a question for me. Why can't this team function without Christian McCaffrey? It's one player.
one player that you did not have for 13 games last year, one player which you went out and you upgraded in your skill position, you got Chuba Hubbard. So why is it all of a sudden, when Christian McCaffrey's out again, you go to crap? It makes no sense whatsoever. And it's not Christian McCaffrey. I'm saying this to be facetious. Christian McCaffrey's not the reason why they call back-to-back timeouts, which then gets you out of field goal position. All right. Christian McCaffrey's not the reason why they have 12 men on the field twice. Like, this is basic crap for the Carolina Panthers with a coaching staff that already had their rookie season excuse out of the way. Okay. There was a shot of David Tepper sitting by himself in the owner's box at Bank of America Stadium. And I'd love to get, like, the translator going. Like, can I read your mind? And I'm guessing it's David Tepper going, I'm paying this guy $6 million a year, guaranteed, for this? What am I missing here?
You know LSU is about to throw whatever and more at Brady to come back.
If I'm an LSU administrator and I see what's going on with Joe Brady right now, and you look at the team they won the national championship with, it basically comes down to, can I guarantee that I'm going to have 15 NFL guys on my offensive staff again? Oh, do I get Joe Burrow come back too? Because we're doing this again.
I'm just telling you what's going to happen this
week. Joe Burrow is basically Cam Newton in the sense that here's a quarterback who got a bunch of dudes jobs. It's not the player who gets the credit. Oh, no. It's the boy genius who gets the credit for this guy having a once-in-a-lifetime chance. Same with Cam Newton, too, when he was at Auburn. So I'm at a loss as to what's happened over the last couple of weeks. Because the Carolina Panthers started out the season 3-0. We gave them a lot of credit. Did they beat bad teams? Yes. But I just saw the Dolphins lose to the Jaguars in London. Supposedly a decent team under Brian Flores, who's gone in the right direction, suddenly losing to a bad team. Happens all the time. So the fact that the Panthers went out 3-0 against bad teams is a credit to them. You go out and you play who you play and you take care of business. They lose to the Cowboys. No big deal. Not a moral victory, but I think most people came away from that game thinking, hey, this defense is good. Sam Darnold looks like he might have like some competence to him now that he's outside of New York. And then the Panthers went out and gave you the indicator that they felt strongly about this team. They signaled to everyone that they felt that this was ahead of schedule. So they go out and they get Stephon Gilmore to go along with the CJ Henderson thing. We're going to back up our defense with these signings, and we're going to be in right now. Hey, we got a slate of winnable games against the Eagles and the Vikings. They got the Giants on the road this upcoming weekend. The freaking Giants, okay, against our boy Mikey G. And even though we lost Christian McCaffrey for a couple games, I think we can handle this. Bare minimum, after the Dallas game. We're thinking, flirt with the playoffs, right? Bare minimum. What are the Panthers now?
As one astute listener pointed out on the Twitters when we were rooting in the preseason for 8-8-1, it was in play in overtime.
Until the defense
fell apart.
We still, you know what, though?
It's
still in play. All right, 8-8-1 is still in play for the Carolina Panthers. It's just, this is the reason why people end up feeling burned. Oh, you gave us a little good, it's like my golf game. You use your analogy of a golf game. I would take it a step further. I can't stand golf, right? But every time I do go out and play, what ends up happening? There's one, you saw it, you witnessed this a couple weeks ago. There's one swing that I go, damn, that felt good. It looked good. The golf ball did what I wanted it to do. If I only invested more time in this, even though I know the full damn answer with that. The Carolina Panthers are that. Everything came together for that once more. I should invest more time in this. And how is it rewarded? With two craptacular games, two losses against teams that they should have beaten, the Eagles and the Vikings. I hope Mike Glennon wins now.
He needs to play first.
Well, there is that
Daniel
too.
Jones out there.
There is that too. Is he back out there? He's back out there. In the meantime, we got Jonathan Jones, CBS Sports NFL insider. He joins us every Monday on the OG. Jonathan, what's up, man?
Man, I am living. How are you guys?
Joe Brady ain't living right now. It's not good when the boy wonder offensive coordinator that people were convinced should be a head coach last year suddenly has his current head coach, Matt Rhule, during a Monday press conference say, yeah, no, we're not taking play calling duties away, but we're going to commit to the run a lot more, even without Christian McCaffrey. It was all good just 2 weeks ago.
Yeah. And, you know, they need to commit to the run, not because Matt Rhule has this great affinity for running the football in the NFL, in today's NFL. And it's not because necessarily Joe Brady is calling bad plays. It's that Sam Darnold threw the football 41 times yesterday against the Minnesota Vikings and had 207 total yards. Now, he had a whole bunch of drops from several receivers, including a touchdown, probably to DJ Moore. Robbie Anderson had a couple of drops. We all understand and appreciate that. But the luster has quickly worn off on Sam Darnold. And I think after three games of this season, we were all like, hey, you know, maybe he's actually worthy of the third overall pick and he just got jetsed. But after three more games, I think we're starting to see, okay, maybe he wasn't as bad as Adam Gase made him, but also he's probably not that great.
Jonathan Jones, CBS Sports, joining us here on the OG on the Heister Automotive Group Hotline. That's Jovius. I'm Joe Giglio. Double J, simple question for you. What planet is Lamar Jackson from?
He is different, man. He is an absolutely different cat. And I called him on our pregame show on CBS Sports Network. He is so unguardable. He's the Skyhook of quarterbacks in the NFL.
I like a double J. Look at you referencing something before Michael Jordan in the NBA. You know, that's not allowed from people who graduated from your school, right? He invented basketball.
Well, yeah, okay. Well, you have some deep-seated things.
Look at you stretching out.
I'll let you work out.
Look at you stretching out. I love it.
No, but Lamar is a guy, you know, no one is equal to his speed. The only person who's equal to his speed is Kyler Murray. But what he does in the open field, how he can perform the RPO game behind the line of scrimmage, he is the most dangerous runner of the football. That's all due respect to Derrick Henry, who is going to play very well tonight. It's all due respect to Kyler Murray because of how in the pocket, outside of the pocket, he can throw the football down the field and throw it accurately. And he's been doing this. He did it during his MVP season. He regressed a little bit last year, and now he's even better than his unanimous MVP season, throwing the football down the field to wide receivers who really aren't all that great. So he's a different cat, a guy that going into this week, I had him third on my MVP list behind Kyler Murray and Tom Brady. And I think that he's still very solidly after trouncing the Chargers at number three.
If this was around the horn and we had more than one person on, we'd have to put Double J in mute right now.
Why?
But he's still our guy. He has an MVP card. He has an MVP list. It's like required by the NFL.
Yeah, I was going to say, when you're an NFL guy, you have to have power rankings, mock drafts, and an MVP watch. Come on now. Jonathan knows what he's doing. He's a pro.
Is it laminated?
It is not laminated, but yes, at everywhere, one must have one of those things. In fact, some people have multiple of those things. Mm-hmm. I just degraded myself just slightly enough to say, after 5 weeks, here's my MVP list.
Jonathan Jones, CBS Sports, joining us here on the OG. Alongside Joe Giglio, I'm Joe Ovias. All right, from one quarterback who's doing the damn thing for the Baltimore Ravens to a quarterback that's not necessarily doing the damn thing, and that would be Baker Mayfield and the Cleveland Browns. Now, if I have this right, they owe Baker Mayfield $18 million next year after they picked up the option, but there's been talk of extension. But given what they've seen out of Baker Mayfield, what kind of contract are we talking about right now?
Okay, so the reports of talks of an extension, I would dispute.
Okay.
And I would only dispute them if people are saying that there are legitimate talks. Have Baker Mayfield's representation spoken with the Cleveland Browns about, hey, we should get a deal done? Yeah, that part has been talked about. But I do not believe, and I've been reporting this since the summer, that the Browns have shown any inclination to get some deal done with Baker Mayfield right now. They don't feel the need to. That's not the way they're constructing their team. All that said, I think we're seeing why. It was great, very solid rookie season in year one, took a step back in year two, bounced back in year three, and now we're sort of like, who is he? And now he's injured with that partially torn labrum that probably got torn a little bit more yesterday in the left shoulder. And so if you are the Cleveland Browns, you are very happy that you have Baker Mayfield because you roll a die and it could come up any which way for any NFL team. You would rather have Baker Mayfield than one of the majority of other quarterbacks who are available. I do believe that he is a top 16 quarterback in the NFL.
Okay.
That said, you are going to look over there and you're going to look at your team from top to bottom, one of the best rosters when healthy in the NFL, and say, you know what? If we just had a top five, top seven guy, we could make it to the Super Bowl. We could win a Super Bowl, because I don't think that folks in Cleveland really, really believe that they can win a Super Bowl with Baker Mayfield. It's like Jimmy Garoppolo a couple years ago with the Niners. And now he's banged up and now you have to pay him. I don't know that any of that is going to be happening by the end of this season.
So the Browns should call Cam Newton.
here we go.
They will not be calling Cam Newton. Well, I would be very, very surprised if they called Cam Newton.
Well, you know, it's a hot vax winter for Cam Newton now that he's, at least in the YouTube video, he said he got vaccinated. So that now gets to the second part of the question. Who's going to get him? I mean, I know there's a team out west that might need him, and I would love for it to happen because I love the buddy cop element of it all. But I'm talking about Seattle, by the way. Where? Come on, Russell Wilson and Cam Newton in the same QB room with all the things that Russell Wilson was doing last night. Please give it to me. I need to see this.
Joe, you and I both want to see this so badly.
Yes,
I would love to see.
I want Cam's aura. I want Cam's aura and Russell's aura together. I want a supernova of aura. Please.
Yeah, I was gonna say that would create antimatter. that would create the God particle, like those two in a room. that's what we need. Really, quantum theorists need to get this to happen. I don't know. I mean, I guess
with
it could
Pete
happen.
Carroll over there smacking the gum,
yes!
And just
clapping his hands.
Right. Inspiring conspiracy theorists, yeah, to come, yeah, speak with the team. Yeah. No, I don't know what is going to be next for Cam for all the reasons that we discussed when he got fired by the New England Patriots. I said fired. When he got cut by the New England Patriots.
He kind of did.
Yeah. It is the aura. And we joke about it, but Cam wants to be a starting quarterback. He said that on his show with his dad. He doesn't want to go anywhere and be a backup. He wants to be that long-term solution. Well, he very clearly would be a short-term solution for the Seattle Seahawks. Can he wrap his mind around that? Would he want to do that? And I don't think it's going to happen with the Seahawks, but where else could it happen? There's no quarterback that's down and out right now for an NFL team. So I still don't see a spot for Cam Newton, and I found it a little interesting that he released that video on a Sunday to say, hey, I'm vaxxed and I'm still ready to go. I just don't know if those calls are going to be coming right now, because he's made it clear what he wants and what he's willing to do. And there's no criteria that fit that right now in the NFL.
I'll say it again, because I'm legally required to say it every time his name comes up. I don't know why he's not on the Steelers right now.
I think that Ben Roethlisberger right now is playing like the 30th best starting quarterback in the NFL.
Yeah. Right.
But there's more aura there. Now, that's the thing. Cam Newton was absolutely right. No, but
nobody owes you anything, Ben. Nobody owes you a damn thing.
Yeah.
You have to look at the rest of the team and say, you know what? We're not that bad. And would we be better if we went out and actually got a quarterback who was functional?
They certainly would. And, you know, they're going to come off of last night's game and say, we're 3-3. We just won each of the past two games. Najee Harris is running the football well, now 200 yards in the past two games combined. And the Steelers fans might feel good, but they beat a bad Broncos team last week, and they beat a completely offensively inept Seahawks team this week. They are still pretenders, and Ben Roethlisberger is still holding this team back. So where could he go, or where could the Pittsburgh Steelers go? The fact is, what Ben Roethlisberger is out there on the field right now is what he was on film last year. And they had all offseason to figure this out and all offseason to move on. Instead, they decided to cut his salary, bring him back, knowing that this was going to be it. There's too much emotion tied up with the Pittsburgh Steelers and Ben Roethlisberger. They're not going to bench him unless he gets injured and they can put him on injured reserve. That isn't happening right now. So I don't see anyone coming into Pittsburgh and taking Ben Roethlisberger's job until he gets injured, and we all hope he doesn't, and is placed on injured reserve and is done for the year and is probably done for his career.
Jonathan Jones, CBS Sports, joining us here on the OG. All right, do you love or hate Aaron Rodgers just flexing on the Bears?
That was absolutely amazing. I 1,000% loved it. You know, the Bears are trying to move out of Soldier Field and go out to the burbs like so many other NFL teams. And the person who's going to miss that the most, they're not Chicago fans, not the Chicago mayor. It's going to be Aaron Rodgers, because he does own them. He's 22-5 against this team. It's and at Soldier Field, he's now won 10 of the past 12. And for him to say that to those fans with a big old smile on his face and full control of what was happening. And I was actually watching this game with a Bears fan, who I think the Bears were up 7-0 early on. And he was rooting and cheering hard. And I said, why are you setting yourself up for this? You know what he's going to do. And you know you're going to lose. But I will say also this. It doesn't feel like it right now. It might feel like tectonic plates shifting underneath the Earth's crust. But maybe the fortunes of these two teams are changing. And we just can't really perceive it right now. Because this is the last time Aaron Rodgers plays at Soldier Field. He's going to be with another team next year. And Justin Fields is showing some promise. And once Matt Nagy is no longer in that building and has his hands on him, and he has a quarterback that fits and suits what he does, maybe, just maybe, we can see the Bears try to come back into the top of the NFC North. But it certainly is not happening. Didn't happen yesterday. Won't happen this year.
Jonathan Jones, CBS Sports NFL Insider, joining us here on the OG. He joins us every Monday throughout the NFL season alongside Joe Giglio. I'm Joe Ovius. All right, before we get out of here, Chiefs back or what?
No, they still have some very, very legitimate issues. They have some issues with their pass rush. They have issues with their defensive backfield and really the linebacker, Ben Neiman, the safety, Daniel Sorensen. They need to get Juan Thornhill out there to get some more speed. This is what I've gleaned talking to a source before the game that they played against the Washington football team. They beat a not very good Washington football team. So they still showed themselves against the elite teams in the AFC, against Baltimore, against the Chargers, certainly against the Buffalo Bills, and they came back against the Browns in week one there late in the game. So I still think that this is a Chiefs team that is going to make the playoffs. They may very even well win the AFC West, the second toughest division in football. But I do think that there's some fatigue. I'm not going to call it a Super Bowl hangover because I think that's cliche. But if Patrick Mahomes is not playing at an MVP or near MVP level on any given Sunday, this is not a team that can make it to the AFC Championship game.
It's not a cliche if it's real.
I mean, maybe it is, but here's my thing. It's not a Super Bowl hangover. It takes incredible injury luck in order to make a Super Bowl to begin with. Almost every year, yes, it's normally two of the best teams that make the Super Bowl, but also being the best means that your best players were available to you when you needed them the most. It's no coincidence that the two of the healthiest teams always make the Super Bowl. And so that plays into it. And if you don't have health on your side, then that's going to be a factor. You look at the Arizona Cardinals. Outside of Max Williams, their tight end, and they just traded for Zach Ertz. Outside of Rodney Hudson, who just missed a game, and there were some problems with the quarterback center exchange yesterday, the Arizona Cardinals are one of the healthiest teams in the NFL right now. They're also the only undefeated team in the NFL. There's luck. Yes, they're good. They're great, if you want to call them that. But they're also healthy.
Jonathan Jones, CBS Sports, NFL Insider. All right, man, we'll talk to you next week.
Appreciate it.
Jonathan Rand, normal producer of this program, is on assignment. He'll be back later in the week. Dennis Cox is filling in. But that doesn't mean Acapella of the News goes away.
Yeah. It's time for Rand to
Acapella of the News. All right, Dennis, what you got cooked up?
Oh, well, you know, Dave Doran said no one shows the Wolfpack any love, but I decided to give him a little bit of love.
Oh, boy.
Here comes the Wolf Packer. Devin Leary quarterbacker. Bam and Ricky running back, sir. Still love you like that. No, no, they don't cry. Yes, they are so fly. Test them and you'll hear the fat lady sing. Act like you know the call. I know they throw the ball. Watch receivers go. Uh-oh. Move the chain, chains. Here comes the Wolfpacker. Devin Leary quarterbacker. Bam and Ricky running back, sir. Still love you like that.
How much more is that?
Always
Coach
a remix.
Coach Doran, don't be wary. This is your time, baby. All of your time. Throw a fade, trust me. Fade to a mezzi. Now struggle, you see. This is your time. Here comes the Wolfpacker. Devin Leary, quarterbacker.
Well done, Devin.
Bam and Ricky running back, sir.
Well done. Well, you don't have another. Do you have more lyrics?
No, no, that's it.
Okay, I was just double checking. I was just double checking on that one. Well done. Full Saturday slate with some drama. Some drama in Tennessee. Some drama at LSU. Is that Orgeron is out as the LSU head football coach? It was all good just 2 years ago. NC State with a nice win over Boston College. North Carolina escaping at home against Miami. NFL, Panthers are atrocious after 2 weeks of getting beat by bad teams. Then again, I guess the Panthers are a bad team. All of this creates takes, but are they bad takes?
Hello, darkness, my old friend. Looks like we've got bad takes again.
All right, Dennis, what have we found on the national level?
Oh, well, you talk about bad teams. Well, apparently going 5-1 makes you the best team ever. This is why Michael Irvin says,
"Oh,
Cowboys fans, get your tickets."
Oh.
I want you to know, go get your Super Bowl tickets.
Oh, God.
Go get your Super Bowl tickets. Get them early. I'm trying to help you out right now because I know what it takes to win Super Bowls. I know what it takes to win championships. And on every level, I have won championships. And there are certain things woven through those teams that I see now in the Dallas Cowboys. Oh, and I'm telling you, go get your tickets early because we will be in SoFi. I'm telling you right now.
Is Mike McCarthy still the head coach of the Dallas Cowboys? Did I miss something? Did they change who the coach was?
Last time I checked, he's still there.
So Mike McCarthy is still in charge of things like timeouts and clock management and all that kind of stuff, right? Okay, well then no, don't get your Super Bowl. My goodness, why do Dallas fans do this to themselves?
It's woven, Joe.
It's woven.
You can't see it, but Michael Irvin can.
Well, did Michael Irvin also see where Bill Belichick gifted Mike McCarthy in this game on Sunday?
Going to resist the urge to make a Michael Irvin joke.
Well, yeah, okay.
They lost to Tampa in the opener. Everyone was excited because, wow, they played them close.
Yeah.
Then they beat the Chargers on the road. Legit win. These last four? Come on.
I know. Come on. Stop it now.
Come on.
All right, next up.
Well, his co-host on First Take, Stephen A.
Ah.
Yes, well, he has a different idea of who makes the Super Bowl.
And I push for the Cleveland Browns to trade Odell Beckham Jr. to the Green Bay Packers.
Boy,
I promise y'all, if Odell Beckham Jr. ends up with the Green Bay Packers, Green Bay Packers going to the Super Bowl.
These guys
Not
know.
Dallas. Green Bay Packers going to the Super Bowl.
These guys know the Buccaneers and the Rams are in the NFC, right? Like, I'm being serious right now. Like, if you were going to try to make the argument to me, like, hey, in the AFC,
yeah,
like the Bills, obviously, sure. I believe, are the favorite now in the AFC.
I'm with you on that.
If you had said to me, hey, yeah, they can get there through the AFC, like, legitimately, the Rams and the Buccaneers are the two best teams in football.
Mm-hmm.
So why are you acting like they're going to go through them?
Because of the love for Aaron Rodgers. It's as simple as that. There is a...
Aaron Rodgers, who's what now?
I know.
1-4 in the NFC Championship game?
But if you give him OBJ, then it's all good. It's all good.
Yeah.
And look, they just beat a Bears team that's been going through it, and they got the Justin Fields experiment and whatnot. And yes, we can all sit there and grin at Aaron Rodgers saying, I own you to the Chicago Bears, but let's not get too
crazy.
This
is the definition of there are no consequences for bad takes, right? And I feel bad for people on ESPN because there are times when I watch ESPN shows, I try to listen to ESPN radio, and the only thing they talk about is the NFL. That's
mm-hmm.
it.
Mm-hmm.
That's the only thing. So you have to, like, concoct these half-baked takes about, if Green Bay traded for a terrible, worn-down receiver who hasn't been effective for 4 years, they're going to make the Super Bowl. The Cowboys, who've won exactly one game over a good team, they're going to make the Super Bowl. Like, you have to convince yourself of this crap during the day because it's all you ever talk about.
That's why Stephen A. Smith makes $9 million. I think that's what he makes. I think he makes $9 million or something to that effect. He makes
a lot more than me.
He makes a hell of a lot of money for those half-baked ideas, which means I'm clearly doing it wrong. You and I are doing it wrong. It's like the podcast, right? I see what like podcasts make, and I see how much like downloads they get. I'm like, well, that's why we have to pivot and be a live podcast. That's where
your
we make
second
our money.
Ross reference of the show.
Next up,
pivot.
Yeah,
pivot.
Right. Pivot.
All right. So a lot of bad things happened at Tennessee with Ole Miss and the UT fans there with Lane Kiffin. Now Josh Pate of CBS Sports HQ has the explanation as to why the fans were acting the way they were.
A bunch of Tennessee fans did something stupid last night. We can acknowledge that, but I also don't think it's excusing the behavior to acknowledge that without piss poor officiating, you never would have gotten to that point. And it's not the first time it's happened, and it will not be the last time it happens in the SEC.
If
they got a big time officiating
problem. You
weren't
wearing that outfit.
It's happening every single
week.
Only. It's not just an SEC problem, but this is a conference that claims it wants to lead by action. It wants to lead the pack. So before anyone else does anything, how about the SEC take the lead and again acknowledge this is a billion-dollar brand. We should not have a nickel-and-dime officiating branch on an otherwise billion-dollar tree. There's no reason for it.
That's a great pull, Cox. Well done.
Okay. This is where I admit that I am not as immersed in other cultures as others claim to be.
Let me just steer this. Not to dismiss whatever point you're about to make about the SEC and whatever this nonsense
was. This was about Tennessee, but yeah.
Can we just talk about two of the great moments from this game?
Yeah.
Please.
Yeah, yeah.
At the risk of interrupting you.
Sure, no, go ahead.
Because I'm feeling some kind of way about some things here.
All right.
Okay. Let's just talk about the two glorious moments from that game.
Yeah.
When they're pelting a bunch of crap onto the field.
Mustard bottle.
The mustard bottle, right?
Golf ball.
Like, Nicole Auerbach trying to get to the bottom of this mustard, but I have no doubt she will, right?
Although there was a game where a burrito was thrown. It wasn't the Tennessee game. I forgot what game. Was it the UConn game? I think there was a burrito that was thrown.
I'm just curious. Anyway. What security guard looked at someone with a mustard bottle in their bag and was like,
it's cool.
What, that you don't think that's filled with Jack Daniels? You think there's mustard in there?
Totally mustard. Somebody does not want Goldens.
That's
the stadium.
Like
they want the yellow mustard.
That's like refilling the absolute bottle at your parents' house with water and be like, yeah, that's what it is.
Totally what'll happen.
That's definitely what.
Oh, the vodka went bad. I don't know what happened.
Nah, put it in the freezer and it froze. That's weird.
And what was the other moment?
The golf ball.
Yeah, the golf ball.
Well, actually, there was two more. Actually, there was one more besides the golf ball, but it was, he definitely had like that Austin Powers type moment. Like, who brings a golf ball? Honestly, who throws a shoe?
Here's Lane Kiffin, head coach at Ole Miss. And the reason why this was a big deal is because Lane Kiffin was back in the building.
Oh,
after,
it was like a 30-minute delay, too.
You know,
it was ridiculous.
He's back in the building, and everybody's mad at Lane still, you know, because of all the things that had happened at Tennessee, you know, bounced from Tennessee. And yes, there was poor officiating, but here's Lane Kiffin, super chill, and the whole thing being, you know, people tossing stuff at him, including a golf ball.
I don't know if I'm more excited that we found a way to win or I didn't get hit with the golf balls they were throwing at me, but no, really. Our defense rose to the occasion. We did horrible on offense there, but not finish off, so great job. The quarterback battled with a ton of injuries around him. We had basically four starters didn't play on offense, so an electric crowd, credit to them. You know, this is a great place and great fans.
So yeah, there's Lane Kiffin on all the disaster that happened at Tennessee over the weekend. Now, to my point, am I missing something, or why are we condoning any behavior from Tennessee fans? And then the petulance that's coming from Tennessee fans too. Like, for instance, Pat Forty, columnist for Sports Illustrated, wrote something calling out, and mind you, it's like a few hundred dumb Tennessee fans, right? But this is a pattern with Tennessee where they're sitting here justifying their own poor behavior. Like what happened with the coaching search.
Yeah.
Where like, well, we had every, if you've been through what we've been through, there's countless other fan bases that can sit here and tell you, oh, we've won a national championship before too, and we've been terrible for a long time. But you don't see us throwing mustard bottles at people or doing online campaigns, which has been, you know, Pied Pipered by one of the great con artists of all time who now does, you know, does TV for Fox, right? So what makes Tennessee fans think they're like special and that they can have justification for this kind of stuff, right? So Pat Forty calls him out, and some other national sports writers call him out, and there's like this one dude who's eighth on the depth chart at a sports talk radio station on Knoxville who says, I will fight anybody at my station who even thinks about booking Pat Forty on an R radio show. So you're, what? So you react to being called a bunch of children by acting like a child. Brilliant. That's also a classic sports talk radio move, too, if I can, like, pull the curtain back a little bit. There's two great sports talk radio moves to basically act like a tough guy in this business. The first one is what this guy in Knoxville, Tennessee just did. He's never allowed on my show! Well, it would require this person to be interested coming on your show, but man, you sound like a tough guy because you're basically making it like out like your platform is so important that by taking him off my airwaves, he can't peddle his stuff, even though he's a nationally known columnist. The other move, I think is the better move, is when you tell somebody, come on my show and debate me. That's always a classic one, too. As though your show, your local show, is the platform that this person nationally desperately needs to get on to promote whatever he was promoting, and then you can, like, play gotcha or whatever it is. Usually what ends up happening in those situations, you know what happens in basketball from time to time? You get the easy dunk and you clang it off the rim. Like, you stuff yourself. That's usually what happens in these situations when somebody, like, comes on your show to debate you and then they run circles around you. That's probably what happened here, too. So, Tennessee fans, you're not that special. But anyway, mustard bottle. It's pretty good.
The mustard bottle got me. And then Lane Kiffin catching the one water bottle on the way out.
So you're saying there wasn't mustard in there?
I am.
See,
I am willing to gamble. Yes.
I saw the mustard bottle.
Sums of money.
Yes. I saw a mustard bottle, and I thought to myself, man, that person's really committed to their brands. Like, if you went to a football stadium and you had a bottle of Heinz 57 ketchup, I would be like, well, yeah, that's Chilio. He really rides hard for Heinz ketchup. And he's not going to take – if he goes up the press box and they got Hunts for the free meal, hell no. Hell no. That's when Chilio breaks out his Heinz 57 ketchup because he is brand loyal.
You've been listening to the Best of the OG with Ovius and Chilio podcast, part of the Capital Broadcasting Podcast Network. Brought to you by Capital Financial Advisory Group. Get your total retirement income plan by texting JOE to 21000. Don't forget, this podcast drops every weekday at 6 p.m. And you can find it at WRALSportsFan.com, the WRAL Sports Fan app, or you can subscribe for free at the iTunes and Google Play stores.